This is Digital Story Podcast number 892, April 26, 2023. Today's theme is Going Beyond the Polarizer. I'm Derek Story. It's true, we just don't need many filters these days for our digital cameras. Maybe a protection filter? Maybe not. Many photographers, if they carry anything at all, it's a polarizer. But if you're interested in distinguishing your work from the masses, there are a couple other filters I recommend. And I'm going to share those in the first segment of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I was thinking the other day that maybe one of the reasons I like filters is because a new filter costs a lot less than a new lens, right? And I can still change the look of my images with the filter. I don't have to buy a completely new lens. And in the case of cameras that have a fixed lens on them, well, I mean, you can buy an auxiliary lens. There might be one or two of that, but really, you're down to filters, right? Before I get into the creative filter that I really want to talk about today, which I will, I won't delay that too long. Why don't we need filters today? I mean, when I was shooting film, oh my gosh, I had so many filters. In fact, I still have them. They're in a shoebox here at the studio. I've got like green filters and weird color fluorescent filters, warming filters, all that kind of stuff. Well, when you're shooting film, and if it was a daylight balanced film and you weren't in daylight, then unless you wanted your skin tones and the other tones in the shot to look a little off, you had to compensate by putting a filter on. And those filters had some density to them, many of them. You take your 200 speed film and suddenly it's 100 speed or whatever. So it was really quite the nuisance. What a pain in the neck strap they were, really. One of the great things about digital cameras is they brought us white balance. And so now we don't have to carry filters to compensate for different lighting situations. And that is such a wonderful thing. I mean, that alone was reason enough to buy a digital camera for me. I was really excited about that. And even with black and white photography, you know, and in that case, I would use a yellow filter, orange filter, red filter, and green filter for black and white photography to alter the different tones in the shot to darken the sky or lighten up some landscape, whatever it happened to be. Even those filters are built in to most digital cameras now. I know in my OM system and in my Fujifilm, I can do black and white plus yellow or black and white plus red. Well, that yellow or red refers to, yes, the filter that I no longer have to carry around. And even, let's go even further with this, one thing that many landscape photographers will still carry is a neutral density filter, right? And neutral density 4, 8, all that kind of stuff to, you know, slow down the shutter speed. So if they want to shoot, you know, water, a waterfall or something, and they want to have that water nice and angelic, then they could put on a neutral density filter and slow down that shutter speed and, you know, get the effect that they want. Even digital cameras have those built in now, right? So on both my Olympus and on my Fujifilm, I have built-in neutral density filters. Granted, I'm not a landscape photographer. So if you're a serious landscape photographer, you'll probably appreciate what's built into your camera and you'll probably still want some physical neutral density filters. And I totally get that. And at our workshops, we still have people using physical neutral density filters. So that's one that will still creep into the rotation depending on what you're doing. For me, I like the digital ones built into my camera. But that leaves us with the polarizer, which, yes, you can emulate a polarized landscape in Lightroom. Yes, you can. And it pretty much looks like it. At least aspects of the image will look like it, like the sky or something like that. But polarizers, they're better in front of the lens, right? They're actually a filter that's still worth carrying, because they do all sorts of cool stuff. You know, first of all, they can get rid of distracting reflections. And if you're ever trying to shoot, let's say, koi fish in a pond, right? You got a little pond there, it's daylight, fish swimming around, go, oh man, those things are really beautiful. I'd like to take a picture of that. Pull out a polarizer and you can really get a great shot of those fish that are swimming under the surface of the water, because the polarizer, if you rotate it just right and stand at the right angle, will actually eliminate all that reflection coming off the top of the water. Super handy. And it eliminates other reflections as well, or at least downplay them enough so they're not so darn distracting. That's hard to do in post. I mean, right? I mean, these days, especially with AI, we can probably do just about anything, but this is very easy, right? Just put that polarizer over the front of the camera lens, rotate it a little bit, reflections diminished. Oh, yay. And it's such a cool thing when you rotate it and suddenly, you know, those, in this case, those fish just jump out at you. You go, man, that is really cool. I love that. You can also use a polarizer to deepen a blue sky. You know, you want it a little deeper color. Maybe there's some clouds in the sky. You want to pop forward a little bit more. Polarizer can definitely help you with that. And if you're shooting black and white, or if you know you're going to convert your image to black and white, use that polarizer and get that sky as deep blue as possible, because a deep blue sky is easy to convert to a very dark sky, a very dark gray sky, almost like IR. Using a polarizer, you can do that, and it makes your job a lot easier in post-production. So polarizers are handy for skies in black and white photography as well. And then, of course, you've got the handy reduces the shutter speed by 2 stops. You know, so you always have that in addition to whatever ND thing you have going on inside your camera. Hey, I got a 2-stop neutral density filter, more or less, right? I can reduce reflections or get rid of them altogether. I can deepen a blue sky. And therefore, most photographers, that's basically all they carry, right, is a polarizer. Now, I have 2 other filters that I carry with me. One of them you're going to know about, because I talk about it quite a bit. The other one you're not going to know about, or probably don't know about, because I never talk about it. I don't do secrets with you, right? I don't do secrets. I tell you everything I know. That's the deal, right? I don't hide any techniques. I don't hide anything back. So I go, why haven't I talked about this? Okay, so I'm going to talk about it today, but let's do the one you know first. So I have the polarizer, and then I have the Hoya R72. I just talked about it, right? Was it last week? For black and white IR photography, especially super handy when you're in a bright contrasty situation, middle of the day. If your camera does okay with IR, if you put an R72 on it, it is just a great filter to have with you. Gives you a whole new set of options, right, that you didn't have before you put that filter on. Whole new set of options. I love it. I never leave home without it. I always have the R72 with me. The third filter I'm going to tell you about right now is the Nisi Black Mist Filter. And Nisi is N-I-S-I, Nisi. Very popular filter brand. They make all sorts of stuff. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Black Mist Filter. We probably all have played with diffusers in the past, or softeners, or whatever you want to call them. You know, I have played with many of them, even like, you know, the Zeiss version and all that. And I have to tell you, across the board, and I got a bunch of these things in my shoebox too, right? Across the board, I have been disappointed with them. And why have I been disappointed with them? Because they did too much. They diffused too much. They degraded the image too much. I lost too much sharpening. They were just too much. Even if I got a light version, it was still too much. And so I stayed away from these things for a long time. When I was shooting weddings, I would pack the lightest one that I had, and maybe do some portraits with it. And this was even back in the film days, right? Do some portraits with it. I could get away with it on a bride at a wedding because it's kind of that kind of photo shoot, right? You could get away with it. But even so, in my heart of hearts, I'm looking at the shots. I'm going, that's too much. It's just too much. And I really did not use them for a long time. So then I learned about the Nisi filter. I really learned about it because they made a cool one for the Fujifilm, the X100. This will crack you up. What initially attracted me to it was the mount, was the mount itself. Because it's not like a standard mount. It is a mount that is made for the X100. And so, you take off the little adapter ring on the X100 and you screw this in and it looks like it's part of the camera. Wow, that is a cool filter mount. And so that's initially what attracted to me. And I go, I've got to try this. And then I was just hoping that the filter was good. Well, as it turned out, the filter was fantastic. The filter was as good as the lens mount. Now, and I'll talk more about it comes in different mounts and all that kind of stuff. We'll get to that in a second. So I go, oh, right. All right. So what does this thing do? Well, it comes in three flavors, 1/8, 1/4, and 1/2. The one that's for the Fujifilm is the middle one. It's the 1/4. And so it's first of all, it's not too strong. So what does it do? Well, here are some of its characteristics. It reduces highlights and lowers contrast. If you want to shoot midday and you don't want to go black and white, so you don't want to put on the R72 or you don't want to just shoot straight black and white, I go, I want to shoot in color. It's midday. What do? This filter helps so much because it reduces the contrast, but in a very pleasant, artistic way. In fact, that even leads to my second point, which is it can be used to create a cinematic look. Cinematic look is one of those things that's sort of hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. You take a streetlight. A cinematic look, that streetlight's going to have kind of a glow to it, right? It's going to be a little diffused. This filter works in those conditions. It does the same sort of thing. It takes like light sources and it just softens them a bit. One of the shots, of the two shots that I'm going to post, one was a midday shot and it was of a bumblebee on a blue ceanothus flower. And this bumblebee was so cool. He had a ton of pollen that he had collected. I mean, I don't even see how he was able to fly. And because of the rains we had in California, the bluebell ceanothus was just booming. I mean, it was beautiful. The green was green. And of course, Fujifilm cameras and green go together like, you know what? And the flowers were beautiful. This was the time of day I had. The bee was there. And so I wanted to shoot the shot. This filter helped me get the shot and it doesn't look like midday. It just looks like a really nice shot. The other one is a shot of Sylvester. She had her head resting on a shoe. She was using a shoe as a pillow by an open window, south-facing window. So there's a lot of light coming in. It's really bright. You know, those are really tough situations because there's so much light there. And I wanted the window to be, you know, in the shot. But I didn't want to detract from Sylvester. I used the filter. It just turned out beautifully. The filter just sort of like made everything work. All right, so it creates that cinematic look, especially with light sources. It doesn't derail sharpness. And one of the reasons why I'm showing the two shots I'm showing you, one of the bumblebee and the ceanothus, is because the bumblebee is sharp. The flowers of the ceanothus that are within the depth of field are sharp. I'm not losing any sharpness, which is sort of kind of mind-boggling, right? How do you diffuse the highlights? How do you lower the contrast with a filter, but you still retain sharpness? And you look at this filter and you can't really see anything's going on there. Like, how does it do all of that? But it does. It does. And the same thing with Sylvester's eyes. You know, this kitty has beautiful green eyes. And, you know, I always want them to come through. She's a black and white cat. She's a tux. And then she's got these beautiful green eyes, and I want them to come through. Again, her eyes look terrific. So it doesn't derail the sharpness. Now, I haven't done, like, I never sat down and did a side-by-side, one of those labby kind of things, because I get bored doing that stuff. But I would imagine on a side-by-side with and without the filter, there's probably some change in the sharpness, but it doesn't feel like it when I look at the shots. Okay. So anyway, I'm just going to say it doesn't derail sharpness. And then it comes in a variety of sizes. So here are the sizes that you can get this filter. The Nisi, N-I-S-I, right? Black Mist. 49 millimeter, 67 millimeter, 72 millimeter, 77, and 82 millimeter. Plus, they have the special mount for the X100 series of cameras. And they have a special mount for the Ricoh GR3X. And that's pretty cool. That's a cool looking mount. And they have a really nice one for iPhones too. Basically, I would say you can use it with practically any camera, right? Any camera that you most likely have for your serious artistic work. Comes in all sorts of stuff. The one for the Fujifilm, actually, I think is a deal. That one's $69. And I mean, there's some serious brass in that mount, right? It's not just a little filter ring. It's like, it becomes part of the camera. So that one's $69. The one for the Ricoh GR3X, that's a kind of a kit because it has a more elaborate adapter. And so that one's $95, but that comes with the filter, the mount, and I think a pouch too. And then they have a filmmaker kit for the iPhone. Now that one's $149, but includes the filter holder, which is, again, really super nice. The Black Mist 1/4 filter, a really nice case, and then a True Color ND Vario Pro filter. So that's a whole shebang. And they put that together because a lot of people are making movies, video with their iPhone. So, it's very logical. And then I believe I saw somewhere on their page that they also have filters for certain drones too, which I think would be, really super interesting because a lot of times, we're flying the drone midday, it's contrasty, things can kind of look a little yuck, a little flat. One of those filters on a drone camera could be really fun. Now, I have the one in the middle, as I mentioned, I have the 1/4. And I really think that's a nice strength. The 1/8, I would say the 1/8, you could practically, depending on what camera you have, probably leave that on all the time, and it's just going to, especially if you like that look where it just takes the edge off things. I mean, sometimes digital images, let's be honest with each other, get a little edgy, don't you think? Don't they get a little digital looking? These move it to a little bit more cinematic film. Just take the edge off. It's like a glass of wine, after a rough day. Just kind of takes the edge off a little bit. And then I haven't seen the 1/2. I'm concerned that for me personally, I'm still a little camera shy from those early diffuser days. 1/2 might be a bit too strong for me. I look at the pictures on their site, on the Nisi site, and I might be a little too strong for me. So I probably will never invest in a 1/2, but I like the 1/4 a lot. So I have links to all this stuff in the show notes. And I have the pictures in the show notes. And, so you can take a look at all this. And it's just been a super addition, a very nice addition to my polarizer and my R72. I don't carry a ton of filters, but I do carry these. Regardless of which camera you use for your creative work, there's probably an artistic filter that fits it, whether it's this Nisi filter or some other filter. And, the really nice thing about them is you don't have to do anything in post. So, I put the filter on the X100V, I take the pictures, and then I'm just like enjoying them on the back of the camera. I go, I got to upload these to the computer. And when I do upload them to the computer, I'm not disappointed. It's not like, oh, they look good on the LCD, not so good now. No, not that way at all. In fact, I'm surprised at how good they look on the computer. So you can just take pictures and enjoy. We're coming in, for those of you in North America, we're coming into a bright, contrasty part of the year. And this filter might really help your creative photography. The Pentax K3 Mark III monochrome is so popular, Ricoh can't keep it in stock. Huh, darndest thing, isn't it? Right? Remember, who would be crazy enough to buy a monochrome-only camera? Do you remember hearing that somewhere? I do. I can't remember exactly where right now, but I know I've heard it somewhere. So let me read you this. This was on petapixel.com. I have the link in the show notes. Ricoh has already sold out of its Japanese allocation of the Pentax K3 Mark III monochrome cameras twice. Clearly, the company's latest DSLR is extremely popular. Announced earlier this month, the Pentax K3 monochrome is the only black and white DSLR on the market. Based on the original K3 Mark III Pentax flagship APS-C camera, the body of the monochrome version is not substantially different other than the lack of color in the design and the fact that the sensor is only capable of capturing black and white photos. We talked about this. Clearly, the camera is extremely popular, at least in Japan, since Ricoh has not been able to keep it in stock. While the camera doesn't start shipping until the end of April, pre-orders have flooded the company to the degree that it's not going to have any more available for at least a couple months. Ricoh in Japan actually apologized that it had run out of its allocation for the country the same day the camera was announced. Quote, "We are pleased to announce the number of pre-orders for the Mark III monochrome matte black edition, a monochrome DSLR camera that's scheduled to be released on April 28th, has greatly exceeded our initial expectations. As a result, production is unable to keep up with demand." Ricoh said that on April 13th. "Therefore, we will temporarily suspend accepting new orders until we have a certain outlook for product supply." And then they said they apologize and all that good stuff. 5 days later, Ricoh announced that it had resumed accepting orders for the camera, as it had apparently been able to catch production up with orders that would be able to ship out the second allocation by the end of May. That did not last long. On April 21st, Ricoh sold out again. So the Pentax K3 Mark III monochrome is still available to pre-order for $2,200 in the United States. But given the popularity in Japan, it's not clear how quickly those pre-orders will actually be shipped to buyers. Well, I'm hoping, okay, so the other part I didn't tell you about this is that as soon as I found out about that camera, like I said, I went through this whole wrestling match in my brain about it. I talked about it on the podcast. And I go, I want to shoot with it. I mean, that was like the bottom line. You know how that you do the pros and cons list. And let's say there's like one pro and there's eight cons, right? But that one pro is, I want to shoot with it. Then, you know, you're probably going to try to get your hands on it. That's, at least that's what I did. So right away, I contacted my buddies over at B&H and I said, is there a chance I can get a loaner of this camera? And they said, yes. So they put an order in for me right away. If there's any allotment at all coming, you know, to the U.S., then hopefully I'm in that first allotment, whatever it is. And I'll have the camera for a month. That is if I can make myself send it back. We'll wait and see how I feel about it. And I will report to you about this. I like it when businesses look for niches, when they look for things that are off the beaten track a bit, and then, you know, try to fit that in with their business model and what they know about their customers. And I like creative business. And this, to me, is just really fun. And they announced it practically the same time that Leica announced their latest monochrome without an E, for what? Four times more? More than four times more the price. I don't know. This whole thing just feels kind of cool. I'll let you know if I actually get the camera. But I just had to pass this on. Who would be crazy enough to buy a monochrome-only camera? Well, apparently a lot of people. This week on Live View. Oh, more great stories this week. Live View, of course, is the publication that I'm editor of on Medium.com. I just love this gig. I love my writers. I love everything about this project. This week we have Learning Process from Ansel Adams, and that's written by Ben Long. And this is a terrific piece because he talks about the process that Adams used to get to his final image and how that actually might parallel a lot of what we're doing right now. Really nice piece. Then we have Five Simple Steps for Shooting on the Street by Sean Staples. And what I like about Sean's piece is that he really kind of got down to the basics on this. I mean, just really, if you follow these five steps that Sean talks about, you will come away with some nice shots with your urban photography. So very nice piece. He included some terrific pictures. Love it. And then our third piece is Shooting Blind by Lawrence Lazar. And Lawrence is legally blind. Now, that doesn't mean he can't see at all. That means, you know, he has basically, he can only see on the periphery of his vision, but not straight ahead. And it's a disease that he talks about in the article. And he's a photographer, you know, going into it, and he's determined to be a photographer as he goes through this whole process. And it's super interesting, his point of view, his adaptations, his images. He shows a picture of like what we would see and then what he would see of the same scene. And he's going to keep going with this. His next article, I already know what he's going to write about. And it's really interesting as well. So we've got three terrific articles there. And, you know, if you want to see this stuff, and I hope you do, just go to medium.com/live-view. And if you're interested in becoming a writer for us, just drop me a note, dstory@gmail.com. Say, hey, I'm really inspired by what you guys are doing on Live View. I have something to contribute. And then we'll take it from there. And be sure to clap for the articles you like. Be sure to follow the authors. Be sure to follow Live View. Let's keep this thing going. Have some really quality work for us to read online whenever we go over to that publication. What is juice jacking and how to protect yourself? And this is an article that was on Apple Insider. For those of us that are mobile photographers or who are out in the world a lot, I just thought this was kind of interesting. Inserting an unprotected iPhone or iPad into a new port can leave you with unwanted infections. It's called juice jacking, and there are ways to protect yourself. You may not have previously thought about cybersecurity when charging your iPhone on the go, but that lightning cable can carry data as well as power. And here are the vulnerabilities involved and how to minimize the risks. Smartphones and tablet computers use the same port for charging and data transfer. Juice jacking exploits the possibility that an owner might connect the device to a malicious or compromised charging port, which then can be used to steal data from the device. There's a couple different versions of this depending on which iOS you have. When you connect an iOS 7 device, you are prompted with Trust This Computer. Your settings and data will be accessible from this computer when connected USB or Wi-Fi. You can then select Trust or Don't Trust. The wording was later changed to allow this device to access photos and videos. This device will be able to access photos and videos while it is connected to your iPhone. You can then choose allow or don't allow. So the whole thing is, if you're using a public charger, which they are kind of convenient, right? And especially if you're low on juice and you want to keep going, just remember to, if you get that message, make sure that you either choose don't trust or don't allow or don't do anything other than charge my device. Okay. I just thought I'd put that out there because this juice jacking thing is a real thing. And I don't want anyone who's just trying to charge their device to run into any problems. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out by thanking our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community and this podcast month in and month out. They have their own community, their own space over on Derek Story Online, where they share images, exchange advice and answers. Just have a community and just have a place to hang out with other people who like the same stuff that you do. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, joining the communities that we have for them, getting the discounts on the workshops, and just feeling good about supporting this podcast, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around there, and if you like what you see, you can sign up right there at the site. And a big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members. And finally, a huge tip of the cap to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. Red River Paper is the place to go for all of your inkjet printing paper, plus other goodies as well. You can get envelopes if you're printing fine art cards. You can get glassine sleeves. If you want to run a little fine art card business, right? Maybe there's a bookshop not far from your home and a lot of people visit from out of the area and you go, wow, I could have some fine art cards there and I could sell those and it would just feel good for me and, you know, generate a little revenue. Red River Paper, not only can you get the paper specifically for making fine art cards that's scored, you can get the envelopes that are very nice. You can get glassine sleeves, right, to display them so they look really professional. And then they even have a page where they help you calculate the costs for each fine art card that you print and assemble. And that way you know exactly how much you're spending, you know, on materials, and then you can better price your cards. I mean, this is a full service operation. I just love these guys, and that's just one example how they take care of the members of our photography community. They have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. Just click on it, nose around, take a look, learn some stuff, and get some paper and start printing. Big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. And remember, they have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you're considering maybe getting a creative filter to add to your collection. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.